Where are we going with this portion? So much we could talk about, and yet it's that one portion every year when we see Yaakov battling with God in the river. Next to the river there, the river Yabok. It's an awesome point in the scriptures. In itself, nothing particularly huge. What is this? You know, he's sent on his family, he's camping overnight with his little campfire and, I don't know, singing Kumbaya or whatever it is with his guitar, and he's, you know, enjoying his sausages on the, or his marshmallows, whatever it is. And then the most amazing event happens. And it seems so simple, this conflict, this battle that he has, and he describes the place, Peniel, the face of God. He has met with God. It's something which links this event with everything that has gone on before. You know, it's been quite intriguing, I found, the last few weeks as we've been putting the sermons together and researching them and so on, that I sit there sometimes, I think, honestly, on a Wednesday morning, I'm looking at the screen and I think, Lord, what do you want to say? And it's been an unconscious, I think, message which has been coming out these weeks, which brings us right up to Yaakov in this portion, with this battle. One word, I think, would summarize the sermons, really, I think, beginning really with what Lenka was saying about 5 or 6 weeks ago, and have been running all the way through the portion since. And that word is control. We've talked about it again and again and again. And I have to say, not even deliberately so has this been chosen as the theme that's run through. This is a theme which has literally pushed itself off the scriptures into my eyes and my consciousness in a way which has been undeniable is from the Lord. Because there's something about this event, there's something about what's gone on before in this family that runs through. Because this patriarchal family grows and connects as it grows through these portions we've been looking at, with the connecting with the land and the promise of God. There was one question all of these patriarchs grappled with in their lives, and that was quite simply this: who was or is in control? Who is it? Think about with Abraham offering his only son. Why would you do that unless you were not grappling with this whole question of who is in control of your life? Impossible that Abraham could even have done that in faith if he didn't deeply know that it was God who was in control. Think again of the barren wives that we've gone through with the generations, each one with their wombs shut up and only being opened after prayer. Who calls the shots? Who's actually in control of your life? When things are grim and tough and you don't understand which way is up, who is in control of your life? And here we find in this portion our patriarchal hero Yaakov, having lived a life apparently hallmarked by this kind of geeky observance. You know, I can almost imagine he had kind of horn-rimmed glasses. You know, he was the homely type. He was the one who would get the scroll out the cupboard, as it were, every morning to be reading from it. He was that kind of guy. Homely, pious, familiarity with it all. And seemingly so spiritually rooted. I say seemingly because he isn't. Because all of this and more, actually, when you look back through his family life, I think we can summarize it with one word: compliance. He was a man who was utterly compliant to parents, to family, to expectations of who and what he should be. And let's be honest, deeply in himself, with a need to prove himself over against his more dominant, assertive brother. He was a man who needed to prove who he was. And this need for compliance and acceptance, and let's not forget, in the middle of all of this, even his father had to be apparently be duped to get him to bless him. Imagine what that does for any young man's self-esteem and view of himself. Any way to get his father to bless him in this way was to pretend to be his brother. And imagine how that messes with your brain. His need to be accepted by his father as this real man drove Yaakov to strive for success, play it by the book, do what I have to do, because after all, he reckons, if I do what everyone expects of me, do what everyone thinks I should be doing, do what is right, then that way both Daddy and God will like me. If I can only just get it right, if I just get it sorted, then everything's going to be fine, everyone will love me, everyone will accept me. And it was this inner conflict this man had now really internalized that was ripping him apart, this desire to keep the peace, actually a form of codependency, avoiding conflict at all costs, which has been the hallmark of this man's life in so many ways. Let's be honest, he's been on the run for most of his life. There's been things going on here that he's been running from all the way through. Here we now see him with his brother Esau, causing him again to avoid conflict, causing him to send people and gifts ahead to his brother at the start to calm any potential storms from the past, activating, he hopes, forgiveness and reconciliation between himself and Esau. This is a man who frankly would see conflict and would want to avoid it and would be the peacemaker at all costs. And on one hand, it's good. And yet, as anyone knows who comes from a dysfunctional background, and Yaakov certainly did, this is classic behavior to try to take the sting out of potentially violent and hostile situations, quasi, to manage or control them to minimize harm and damage to oneself. This is Yaakov. Turns out to be part of all of this that he's gone through in his life. At this critical moment, God has effectively stripped him naked before him. The family has gone, the animals have gone. There is him, his tent, his fire, and the stars. Oh, and there is God. It's now time for reckoning. This is part of his God-fighting syndrome all the way through Yaakov's life, that he struggled for control in his life, struggled to be the person he felt he should be, and actually what he then discovers at this point is he has been fighting God. I suspect at this moment in his life that Yaakov is in absolutely no mood to confront the past and address its destructive behavior patterns in his own life and, frankly, upon those around him too. He is not wanting to do this. This is the evening where Yaakov is still in charge. Yaakov has no intention of allowing God to get anywhere near him or anywhere near his life, not to actually have some input, not actually to take that throne and to sit as his Lord and Master. Yaakov is still firmly seated on that throne of his life. The one thing Yaakov had not reckoned with was that God had other plans. He was a man racked with inner turmoil. I actually called this talk spiritual warfare. I've deliberately not mentioned it until now. I bet if I'd said to you at the beginning this talk was going to be about spiritual warfare, you'd have remembered the reading from Ephesians 6 and you'd have thought about the armour of God and you'd have thought, oh, I know what Rabbi is going to talk about this morning, and you would be utterly wrong. Not about overcoming and the spiritual walls of engagement to defeat the enemy and principalities and powers. All of that is good and all of that is really part of spiritual warfare, but it is not the part of spiritual warfare I am talking about this morning. There's a much harder kind of form of spiritual warfare, of fighting God, which is the real issue that I want to talk about this morning. Yaakov fought God all night. And we can think to ourselves, you fool. Actually, I think to myself, you are a blessed man. You know why? Because he lived. Fight God, and you could die. It's serious. God chose to let him live, despite his attitude, despite what he was holding up in himself to control his own life in that way. But one thing that comes out of all of this is fighting God is a form of spiritual warfare. but it's not a form that we often relate to, because we often think of spiritual warfare as us fighting the principalities and powers in prayer and fasting and so on. We think that is spiritual warfare, but I can assure you, if you fight God, that is also a form of spiritual warfare. But there's a subtle difference in that and the other form. This spiritual warfare with God is a form you cannot, will not win. You're not going to come away from that situation victorious. It's just not going to happen. And Yaakov still doesn't understand this. He doesn't get this fact. Let's be honest, if we can for a moment, let's be fair to him. I suspect in the midst of all of this, probably, quite likely, Yaakov doesn't even know what he's been doing all along. I don't think that Yaakov, as it were, got up from his camp bed in the morning tending his sheep and thought, you know what, today I think I'll fight God. Yeah. You don't do that. In fact, if you did do that, you would be more than foolish. And I suspect if you did do that, you really wouldn't live. I don't think Yaakov really quite knew what he was doing. But he was doing it. We see it from his lack of spiritual discernment, understanding of this place. We've seen it before with the ladder going up and down, and Yaakov's laying there, goes, I had no idea where I was. What is this place? It's so spiritual. He hasn't got a clue. No spiritual discernment, no deep spirituality about this man can we perceive so far. He's a man who's been in control of his life and he is guiding it. He's on top of it, and boy, is it going to go in the way he wants it to go. Oh, he appears spiritual. He appears to be righteous. You know, he's connecting with the right things. He's doing the right things to make people happy. But it means nothing, because there's lack of depth in all of this. His inability to discern God in all of this is frightening. Spiritual discernment, poor. And in that weakened state of spiritual discernment, frankly, he has been fighting God all his life and really just didn't know. And it wasn't just God that he was fighting, was it? Remember what the angel says to him at the end? You have fought God and man. There's a bit of revelation in all of this. See, the problem is, for Yaakov, he has been fighting God and fighting man all his life. In fact, you could describe his life as being hallmarked by flight, fight and survive. Get through it, and whatever else is true, just survive. He's been brilliant at keeping people at arm's length. So well practiced in keeping people at arm's length, because you know what, when people are at arm's length, guess what? They can't harm you, can they? Situations, arm's length, that can't harm me. I'm protected, I'm okay. In fact, so good was Yaakov at keeping people and things at arm's length. What he didn't understand was that he was keeping God at arm's length too. Revealing something desperately sad. That the moments when he actually needed to understand God, he needed to lean upon God and his strength and his power, at those critical moments, he hadn't built up the reservoir of experience to know how he could draw upon God at that moment. But now that moment had arrived. The Lord had now designed a time for him to be confronted with the reality of his life, and so we now find Yaakov alone at night, pondering his what must have seemed dreadfully insecure future. This is a moment of real weakness for Yaakov. Up to this point he thought he had it sussed. He's going to bed that night, utterly unknowing what tomorrow would bring. Would he live? Would he die? Would his brother slaughter him and his animals? His family, he had no idea. And into this mix steps the angel. And all night long Yaakov wrestles with God, and it is God, not his conscience or even his own mortality, as some of the rabbis suggest. But this wrestling with God that goes through that night typifies almost as if you know, if you can imagine Yaakov in that situation, it's so dark, he can't quite see who he's fighting, and yet this typifies what's actually gone on through all his life. Fighting God, and yet not quite being aware of it. Not quite being able to see it. It's what he's always been doing. And that night, it's as if God confronts Yaakov and says, listen, this is what you are doing with me right now. Stop fighting me. And to make sure he gets this message, he has his name changed, and he also, as we know, physically limps from that encounter. His name is changed to become Yisrael, Prince of God. As a direct result of this encounter, of an understanding that somehow because you've been fighting God, and now I'm going to set you free from fighting me, he becomes Israel. The sad reality that we also have to face in this, though, is that as he took God on, it didn't leave him unscarred. It never does. A man so emotionally exhausted trying to keep it all together and just survive. That's what life's for, isn't it? Just survive. He finally, as a result of that, carries a physical limp from that encounter with God. A reminder that you cannot win against the Lord. Any battle with him that you seriously take on will leave you damaged in some way. It just will. Because he will remind you who's boss. He will make it clear who actually rules and reigns in your life. Can you fight God and prevail? No, you can't. And yet Yaakov, with all of his family background, formative experiences, and as yet immature attempts to walk with the Lord, is a man of formidable inner power and personal drive, but still thinking a man who's in charge of the events in his life. He is the one who shapes them, not God. And that attitude, in fact, led him to not only fight God, but as we said, also man. It's what the angel says to him. Makes it absolutely clear. It is not just the fact that you've been fighting God. He says you've been fighting other people all your life. And here's a bit of revelation that comes from all of this. Any spiritual battle that you have with God is going to be expressed through conflict with other people. Ever thought of it in that way? You can tell when someone's fighting God, because their lives are a car crash of conflict, inner and external, with family, friends, business colleagues. It doesn't matter who it is, it's conflict everywhere. And that's a hallmark of someone who is fighting God deep down. You fought God and man. Why is it that you can see conflict with God coming out through our conflict with the people around us? Quite simply this: people and the situations they carry with them are the primary tools that the Lord uses to bring change, real change, into your life. As you're rubbing shoulders with the person sitting next to you in this community, and there's something about them that you don't like, because you know what, they jolly well should eat the chicken sandwiches and they don't every week, and it really annoys me. As you grapple with that situation, you change. Because you get an understanding after 4 or 5 weeks that, oh, I didn't know they were vegetarian, now I understand. I'm crass, but you know it's true. You multiply that into the different situations that we find in our lives. I tell you, it is people that bring those kind of things into our lives. More often than not. And it's people, therefore, the Lord uses to bring about change in us where we need to change. Guess what? If you are fighting God and resisting change, who will you be fighting as well? The very people around you who God has sent to bring change into your life. And you will fight them. Because ultimately you're resisting God and you're fighting God too. And you will fight back because you will not want to change. Change? Who can change? I'm not going to change. A life hallmarked with fighting God is inevitably going to be hallmarked with interpersonal conflict too. Yaakov, he was fighting before he was even born. There was war going on in his mother's womb between him and his brother. He was then born. He went on to struggle with Laban, and we know what happened, all those years of his struggling and the conflicts that were going on there. Now we see him in his portion again, determined to continue, as it were, avoid the conflict, and yet in his head, he's ready for it, you know? He's still fighting people, right up to that very evening. And his basic failure was to see the hand of God in his life, guiding and steering each day through the acts of men and people around him. Of course, such spiritual blindness will inevitably lead to conflict, because you think you have to control the situations around you, and in particular the other people who are driving them. That is where the conflict comes from, because you think you have to control them. You have to control them because that will bring you the rest which you are feeling you need. I can't be dealing with X, I can't be handling Y. I will shut it down, push it away, lock the door, sit in my corner. I will be peaceful and I will not be disturbed. And I certainly won't be disturbed by God coming and grabbing me, because I'm locking him out too. There will be conflict if you're in that situation. And not only conflict, there's another hallmark of this as well, which we see when people are fighting God. If you are fighting God and the people around you, the one thing I guarantee that they will be doing is blaming others. It's not just the hallmark of conflict you see with people around you. Look where people are blaming other people. When people are being blamed, it's because you are pushing away. You are refusing to stop fighting God, because everyone around you that disturbs your cozy little universe that you have built with the high walls and locked gates around you to keep you well protected from anyone, and certainly from God coming in, anyone knocks that gate in, you are going to start blaming them. It's your fault. Why are you doing this to me? You're causing me harm. Because you're going to make out that everyone else has the problem except moi. I'm okay. Everyone else causes me harm. Everyone else damages me. Everyone else causes me pain. And I blame you for it. And actually, you are failing to see that you are fighting God. How dare they disturb your well-ordered and self-protected existence? How dare God disturb my cozy life? Well, God is about to disturb your cozy life, and I guarantee you, if that is you, he will disturb your cozy life too. Because he's not going to leave you in that comfort zone. We need to ask ourselves, are you constantly at war with others? Seriously, ask yourself this. Is a hallmark of your life that you're constantly at war with other people? Who are always doing bad things to you, always attacking you. It's always their fault, it's always their blame, it's always them. Always, never you. If you're constantly at war with others, that is a hallmark that you are fighting God. If you're blaming others a lot, you are fighting God. It's a difficult message to bring. But we do it. See, we fight God in different ways that we don't even aware how we fight God sometimes. But we do. And I somewhat cheekily called this talk spiritual warfare, because we all know what spiritual warfare is. But fighting God is warfare on a spiritual plane. But its effects are misunderstood. Let me just explain what I mean, because this is something we need to understand for our own spiritual well-being in all of this. If you are fighting God, you will feel his resistance. Shall we say, as Yaakov did that night with the angel. You will feel God's resistance back on you as you are fighting him. And it will be very easy spiritually in that position to come out of and say to someone next to you, wow, I'm up against such spiritual opposition. I'm in such a spiritual battle. And everyone thinks, brother, we'll pray for you because X is oppressing you. Y is doing this. That situation is bad. And yet utterly miss the point. Because what you can discern or feel is spiritual warfare at that point is actually nothing other than you fighting God. And maybe that situation is not as simple as you first made out. Because our perception of that spiritual conflict might look uniform and similar to other spiritual battles that we have been involved in, but the root causes are radically different. You might end up interpreting our inner conflict with the Lord for control over our lives as spiritual warfare. In one way you're right, but misses the point if you are merely saying it's from the enemy. This just might be from God. And you might actually be fighting him in a way that you've not even realized. For him to bring real change into our lives demands a point of crisis, or in psychological terms with a capital K, crisis, if you're aware of what that means. This point of crisis is a transitional bridge from bondage to freedom, and I guarantee you, every transitional bridge, spiritually and otherwise, that we cross in our lives hurts. It causes pain. You don't get free without some kind of knock. This is what Yaakov discovered that night. He got free, but he limped as a result of that conflict. Transition we feel in our bodies, in our spirits, in our minds, in our emotions. And in a broken world, pain is the precursor to healing. Accepting brokenness is the path to wholeness. Resisting that is to resist the change and resisting what God wants to do in your life. When the Lord takes those moments to reset the cosmic chessboard of your life, it can seem as if turmoil is your daily friend, as if conflict is with you, and yet when it's done, you find that you are ready to play another game. But you've got to be reset to do that. I guarantee you fighting God will precipitate such crisis. He will be tolerant. He will be merciful. He will be kind and he will be patient, as he was with Yaakov to the rising of the sun. He understands that we fight him. He knows who we are. We are merely human. He knows our condition. He will understand. But ultimately you will have to accept that he is God. You will have to accept that you cannot fight him. You will have to accept his lordship in your life and that he is in control and not you. If you resist his hand to reset your life, it will only prolong the pain. And I suggest this morning, if you are doing that, then you stop fighting him now. Because you cannot fight God and win. But I'll leave you with a thought of encouragement, because after all this is said and done, after that fighting with God, Yaakov did have his name changed to the Prince of God, Israel, Prince of God. Something fundamental had changed in him and his walk with the Lord that night. If you get into the portions now coming up over the next couple of weeks, Yaakov is a changed man. You'll see it as you read it closely. This is a new man. He has met God and lived. He is now a Prince of God. Any encounter you have with him on this level, I guarantee, will change us, and always for the better if we yield to him. But the question is, will you stop fighting him and embrace what he's planned for your life? Or will you insist on your own path? What are you fighting for? Don't you trust God enough? Can't you let go enough? Is that pain and damage of everything that's gone on in your life so huge that you cannot bend that knee before him and say, Father, help me? The history of our nation changed that night at the Yabok River, because Yaakov became Yisrael. He changed, our nation changed, our future changed at that point. So I just want to leave you with a question before we pray. Are you going to go on from here today to be a prince or princess of God? Or will you continue the fight? Because that limp will get worse. It won't get better. You will eventually concede to him that he rules and reigns and he is in control. But to be a prince or princess of God is to acknowledge that he is the king. And that's a choice, that's a decision that we make. But you can be a prince or princess of God. But you have to let go. In all your weakness, in all your mess, in all your fighting, in all of those issues that we have, you have to let go and let God be God. Amen. I'm just going to pause for a minute. I'm not going to pray. You're going to pray for yourselves. I believe this word this morning is a powerful word. I think this has been a strong word. And this day, right now, at this time, the times that we live in, we cannot afford to be fighting God. There's enough other conflict, enough other things that we need to be engaged in. We do not need to be fighting Him. I just want to spend a few minutes now just in quiet as you pray. Ask God to show you where you are fighting Him, where you need to surrender yet more. Just invite the Spirit to come and fill that place. Oh God, we just pray, bring your freedom. Set us free. Look upon us, Lord, in our chains that we've wrapped ourselves in, the walls that we've built high around us. Look at us, O Lord, and have mercy. Lord, bring us your freedom. Set us free, Lord. Don't let us travail anymore. Let us not fight you anymore. But right now we choose to stop fighting you. Whatever area, Lord, that may be going on, we just surrender our lives to you. Father, we choose, decide to stop. To stop and let you in.